here with Olivia Block. Hi, Olivia.
Hello.
Thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
You're visiting us from Chicago. You're here to do a performance that will have passed already by the time this is aired at Experimental Intermedia.
That's correct.
And so I want to talk about that a little too, but let's talk first about what we just heard, what you just played.
Okay. Well, let's talk about, I'll talk about the piece with the wind in it.
Right. I don't know if anybody has come up here and played the piano the way you did for us, but I'm sure nobody's played our door the way you did.
Yeah, well, it's funny. I was distracted by the sound of this wind, like, buffeting the door the entire time I was, like, setting up and stuff, and I thought it was a really beautiful sound. And generally speaking, I tend to be attracted to the sound of the wind. Like, it's, like, one sound that I've always really found to be really interesting, and I've always really liked the sound of wind through trees and things like that. Mm-hmm. So it's just a sound that I'm particularly interested in. So when I heard that happening just right by the piano, I thought we should take advantage of it and move the microphone and see if we could get some of that.
Yeah, and it says something about your ear, because when I came in there to sort of listen to it with you, I was like, yeah, I kind of hear what you mean, I guess. And then I came back in here and we pushed the levels up, and it's like this huge wintry sort of thing that you're picking up on that I didn't hear until it was like going through the speakers.
Well, and also consider the fact that I usually, you know, I play the inside of the grand piano usually, and this studio has an upright piano. Mm-hmm. So I was actually took the panel off the upright and I was down on the ground. And so my ear was like literally was just down there by the door.
Okay,
so I sort of was like honing in on this sound that you might not be able to hear if you were like standing up or something like that. So it was just kind of like right near my ear.
Right. And it's sort of using a field sound, which I know you do a lot with recordings as well.
That's right.
Are there some field sounds? There are some field sounds we're hearing in these pieces today, right?
Definitely. And in fact, one of the reasons I wanted to use the wind from the door is because I have a lot of wind field recordings, so I thought I could blend those two things together.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, you know, when you hear the piece, you hear the sort of like lower, sort of muted wind from the door, and then you'll hear like a more blustery wind that I recorded.
Right.
So I blend the two.
Okay. And let's explain the actual setup. Is you've got the piano, which you're using the insides of mostly.
Right.
And then some CD players, and that's where the pre-recorded field sounds are?
That's right, yeah. Right. And I have three CD players. And one is the one where you hear like the straight field recordings, like the wind.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are two other ones with little tiny mini speakers that I actually put in the piano. And so I almost think of those as like acoustic instruments. They're small and they're sort of quiet, and I use the resonance from the piano and just sort of have the wood take it up with the rest of the sounds.
Right, right.
So I placed both of those in the piano, and out of the two little mini speakers, I think it was just like almost like white noise types of sounds. So it's all kind of wind,
mm-hmm.
you know, in a way.
Mm-hmm.
It's just blending together. And one of the mini speakers was actually cutting out, so I was just using that as part of the mix, just like letting it cut in and out, and so there was like these little blasts of white noise coming in different places.
And so the piano sort of becomes a sound chamber on the one hand, but then you're using the strings of the piano as well.
That's right. Yeah, I had the pedal down the entire time, the damper pedal, so I was using, you know, all of that, the wood and resonance, and then for a short time in this piece, I was actually playing the lower strings with tuning forks, just running them, like, laterally down the strings.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then, but this is all, I'm assuming, very different from, we're kind of lost in time here, what I will come here, you do Sunday, and what will have passed by the time the listeners are hearing us talk.
Right, I know, it's complicated.
but that's much more composed.
The stuff that you're going to hear that they will have heard at Phil's space. Right, exactly. That's correct. The stuff at Phil, well, first of all, the material that they will have heard at Phil's space involves other musicians.
Right.
So there's one set that's kind of like three pieces for solo violin, for instance, that's going to be first. So that's just acoustic with I'm not even doing anything in that one.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second one has like five chamber musicians, and I'll be mixing things in and doing things with their amplified sounds, like muting them in and out, or I will, I already did that or whatever. Sorry, folks. Anyway, so yeah.
And it went brilliant.
And it was fantastic.
The place was packed.
Yeah. So, right. So all of those things have other musicians. And then the last piece I did had a visual component. It was with these two filmmakers, these amazing filmmakers from New York who I worked with before for this DVD project that I did. And so they're going to be like sort of live mixing visuals while I do some mixing of sounds in the space.
And so I guess for the first two pieces anyway, how structured is that? Is it traditional score or?
Yeah, that's a good question because it's always a funny thing for me to negotiate, actually. The first piece, the violin piece, is all normally scored. It's just straight scores,
so
although there are
notes on a staff.
Basically notes on a staff, although there are open segments to that. And the, you know, there's a lot of timbral material. So even the score, although it's just a traditional score, it's there are weird elements in the score, and it's very particular. As far as like telling the violinist where exactly to put the bow and all these stuff to get sort of noisy effects and things like that. It's weird because sometimes like with that sort of piece, like I never know if I should use a graphic score or straight score. But I've been finding actually lately that I want more control than a graphic score will give me sometimes. Mm-hmm. So.
That's interesting. I've never heard anybody, say that for the same piece in your mind, you could either do a graphic or a traditional score.
Yeah.
That's an interesting way to look at it.
It's funny. I think because I have worked so much with improvisers that a lot of my ideas come from my experiences with them. Mm-hmm. So because these ideas sound sort of like improvisation, they lend themselves to graphic scores more readily than other things.
Right.
And I'm, you know, I like to, the Erica Dicker, the girl who, the musician who played the pieces at Phil's, is fantastic, and she improvises really well, too. So I know that if it was a graphic score, she could interpret that well.
Right.
But I learned a lot, actually, from studying the scores of Chiarino, who's this Italian composer. I don't know if you've ever heard of him.
I'm not familiar, no.
He is the first guy who I've, the first composer that I've heard who makes chamber music that sounds improvised, basically.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds completely spontaneous, but it's, and I thought for a long time that, like, I never understood how he did that. Like, I didn't understand if there were open sort of instructions that, like all of these, you know, bass, clarinet, weird wind sounds were coming because they were improvising them, or if they were just like very specifically scored. And I actually studied his scores, and they were all very traditionally notated.
Wow.
And even like very metrical, which is really impressive to me. Like, I just thought, how can he get this spontaneous sound with
and
these?
And he's contemporary? He's living still? Or?
Yes, he's
okay.
Living still. He's Italian. And he's sort of one of these composers that started, I think, like the lowercase movement a little bit, because a lot of his stuff is very delicate and quiet. He uses a lot of like wind sounds and things like that. So I learned a lot from looking at his scores. I learned not to be afraid of traditional notation when it's necessary, basically. Although graphic scores are better than traditional notation in certain situations too. So
sure.
Yeah.
Sure. And so the piece coming up then.
Mm-hmm.
Is more structured than I think the first thing he played was a little more exploratory.
Mm-hmm.
And when we were recording this, I thought I heard, maybe I'm wrong, but I thought I heard some train sounds in there. I want to talk to you about train sounds.
Okay,
but
cool.
Am I right about that? Was it some
recordings? Actually, you know, well, it's funny that you ask. They were not train recordings, although they were recordings of one clarinet player that I recorded. I did multiple layers of him doing chords that sound like train chords, basically. And they were definitely inspired by that sound.
So you
have, you know, you're smart in asking that question. There was a connection between those two things. So, yeah. And actually, right, that came through one of the little tiny speakers. So that came through for like a second. And I have used a lot of that kind of material in the piece at Phil Niblock's space. Like, that's one of like the themes that comes through is those kinds of chords, those clusters and things like that.
Right. And it's great watching you too. And I guess when you have a grand piano, it's different, but watching you in there, it's just like a technician or something.
That's how I feel about it.
A carpenter or something on the floor working.
That's exactly how I feel. I feel like it's just diagnostics. Like I'm doing like these diagnostic tests or something like that. I'm certainly more of a technician than I am a performer or musician, I feel like, so.
But I wanted to bring up Train Sounds because I guess it was a year ago. It was last December, right?
Yeah.
I was in Chicago where you're living and got to hear the installation that you were a part of at Millennium Park.
Right.
And just talk a little about what that was.
Okay. Well, that was something that was sponsored by the Humanities Festival, I believe, in Chicago. And the Lou Malazzi, from Experimental Sound Studio and from the School of the Art Institute, sort of invited me to participate in this installation that was all of the raw material was just sounds of trains, and it was like I recorded some train sounds, he recorded some train sounds, and then Sean Decker, who was also involved, had some recordings I think too, and we all sort of pooled these recordings together, and we just used the material however we wanted to use it.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, a lot of it just ended up being very minimally processed because the recordings were so rich,
right,
that we just decided to kind of leave them and just, kind of juxtapose things in certain ways, but not really process them so heavily. But a lot of the trains were things that Lou collected, like in Switzerland, and had all these amazing like steam engine sounds and
mm-hmm.
things like that. So, and actually, part of the reason that the Humanities Festival wanted to do that was because there's this high speed rail movement happening in the Midwest,
and okay,
so
it was like,
yeah, isn't that funny? And so actually, in any other situation, I would think that was kind of a creepy thing, but I'm so like for the high speed rail,
sure,
that it's a
sure.
cause I can get behind, and I was happy to have that be part of it. So that was actually part of the reason they wanted the train sounds, sort of like to promote this idea of train travel again.
And you're very modestly not saying how huge this was. So it was in Millennium Park on the lakefront, and the pretty new, a couple years old, the Frank Gehry Theater, mm-hmm. which it's an outdoor theater that I think holds something like 7,000 people.
Yeah,
it's huge. It's a football
really
field.
Huge. Yeah.
With a lattice work running over it with, it's got to be hundreds of speakers, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this is an enormous sound installation and on the Chicago lakefront in December. So it was pretty rugged being out there too. And it was a really impressive space to be in.
Isn't it amazing?
Point being with your sound as well.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
I've never been in the underneath or in the midst of a sound installation so huge.
I never worked in a space so huge. It was amazing. I mean, I was just like daunted and awed at the same time. It was just so incredible. Yeah, I've never worked on a scale like that before. The speakers are so far apart.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just incredible. It's all outside. And it's funny because the configurations that they have, it's a very sort of complicated system there, and it's really meant to mimic the room sounds for the orchestra. So it's sort of like this diffusion of
the Chicago Symphony Orchestra,
right,
is the main home or
exactly.
the main user of this.
Yeah, yeah,
it's theirs, I assume.
It's theirs,
right?
Right, and so they really can't use it when the weather gets
right.
cold. So we sort of like took advantage of that, and it's like it's this perfect space for sound installations, which they never intended it to be used for that. But
right.
So it was pretty incredible. It was amazing to hear just movement from left to right is just like this enormous scale. Like you just hear it out in the distance. It's a totally different way of working, and the architecture is just so overwhelming too. It's just like it's all there. It was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So.
And because you're on the lakefront in December too, it's like there's, when I was there anyway, it was for a month or so, it's up, right?
Yeah.
But there's a dozen, 15 people or so. they're out in the cold, and it's sort of this feeling of, you know, fellow travelers or something. Where
it's true.
The ones that climbed the mountain to hear the sound.
It is like that. And so, and because there are so few people at that time of year, you really can move around a lot.
Right.
You can just walk. I mean, it's just, you really walk a long way to get from one end to the other. It's kind of interesting. So there's like this big field, and you're walking, and it takes, you know, a few minutes to get. It's not like being in a small room. So it's like a totally different kind of experience.
And so the other piece that you recorded for us, there aren't train sounds in it like I thought, but tell us a little how that's structured, what this piece is.
That piece was actually, it's more of a piece that was actually designed specifically to be played on the piano. Like there are, I collected recordings that I'd already made on a piano before and sort of like culled those and mixed them and combined them with live performative gestures on the piano today. So that was, yeah, that was definitely more of a piece for a specific instrument, I guess, and less about field recordings and things like that. And it was more kind of like about the tonality of the piano in a sense, and using, you know, long durations of sounds, like just getting really, the amazing thing about the piano is just the timbre is so rich. Like there's just this such an immense timbral richness that you can really explore, like in just like running a mallet on the low strings and just, you know, using the mallet like a little bit harder or softer just changes the entire timbral quality. So I like to stretch that out, and even just to have the physicality get into it, like my arm gets really tired and things like that. So that's sort of what that piece was more about.
So okay, I understand there's sort of a catalog of things that you know you'll do during it or select from. Is there an arc to it? Is there, do you roughly know how the piece will build and dissolve or things like that?
You know, I thought I did, but it didn't end up that way, actually. So, no, I sort of more know what sections can be.
Okay.
Like, I know that there are certain things that I can do in the piano, and I know what's happening on the recorded side of things, so that I can put certain things together, and I know that that's going to last a certain amount of time, but those things can be rearranged, like the sections can sort of be rearranged. So it's not the same arc every time, but I can sort of plan it out if I do one thing that I know what should be next, basically.
Sure.
Yeah. It's modular in a way, I guess you could say.
Okay, well, Olivia Block, thank you so much again for coming up.
Thanks for having me.
Here.
Oh, it was fun.
And does this piece have a name? That would have been a good question.
No, I'm terrible with titles. It's always the last thing I do, so no. It's all untitled.
Are you willing to take names from listeners?
Yes, absolutely, please.
So post names on the comments page, and we'll make sure Olivia sees them. And thanks again. It's great having you.
Thanks for having me.